All right, good morning. So welcome to the last lecture. And I would like to tell you about the recent progress on, you know, towards understanding and resolving the black hole information paradox. And so my discussion today will be based on this nice review by Maldacena, Hartmann, and other people in this archive 2006. All right, and so we have learned about the black hole information paradox, and then it's very interesting. So let's say that, you know, we start forming the black hole via collapse of a star, which, you know, at the beginning the matter is, you know, in pure state or whatever. You can assume that. And then the black hole forms, and it starts evaporating by Hawking radiation, right? So we have a black hole which radiates away the particles. And we also learned that this Hawking radiation is basically thermal, so doesn't carry much information about you know, how the black hole was formed and stuff like that. So the temperature only depends on the mass of the black hole and so on. And so if the black hole completely evaporates, then we are just left with this Hawking radiation, which is almost thermal, And if that is the case, then we sort of evolve from the pure state to the mixed state. And so that's the information paradox, right? However, this is really a paradox from the point of view of ADS-CFT. So in ADS-CFT, we know, or I was trying to sell to you, that everything that happens in the bulk has exact dual on the boundary. And we know that on the boundary, we have something like QFT. And we know that the evolution of the QFT has to be unitary, right? So if this is to be dual to whatever is happening in the bulk, and now you can imagine that, you know, you put your black hole in a box. And so inside the box, you have quantum mechanical system, right? And this quantum mechanical system has to also evolve unitary because of the ADS-CFT. So due to ADS-CFT, if we believe in that, then evolution should be unitary. So basically, your black hole is, you know, some very, very complicated quantum mechanical system with finite number of degrees of freedom, but it has to evolve unitarily. So in the end, this is inconsistent with the fact that we just have thermal radiation if the black hole evaporates, because we evolve from pure to thermal state. So contradiction, if black hole evaporates completely, right, completely, we seem to have mixed state. And so we violated the unitarity of the quantum evolution. All right, and so I will just, you know, try to tell you the story, like how this is refuted in the recent development, in the recent research. And you know, the first step to realize is that there are two types of entropies. So first one is the quantum mechanical one, which is also, you know, it is von Neumann entropy. So we have first one is the quantum mechanical one. Also fine-grained or von Neumann entropy. Fine-grained. And well, that's simply given by your favorite formula. So S von Neumann is just minus this trace rho log rho, where rho is your density matrix. And so this is your von Neumann entropy. And it basically tells you how much information you have about your quantum state. So if you are in pure state, this will be zero. If you are in equal probability state, this will be maximal, and stuff like that. But what is key about this is that if you start evolving in time, this entropy here, then I just enrich your row matrix with some evolution operator. But there's a trace here, so it doesn't really matter. And this entropy stays the same. Okay, so it's invariant under time evolution. Okay, so that's one property. And the second property which we'll be using is that this quantum entropy. Again, so let's assume that we have pure state, but that we can decompose our Hilbert system into two parts, HA, HB. Okay, and so then you can calculate this von Neumann entropy by, again, tracing out whatever you don't have access to. So let's say I don't have access to region A or whatever here. So you trace out over A, you get a reduced density matrix, you calculate the corresponding von Neumann entropy, the entanglement entropy, and what you will find that SA is equal to SB because we are in the pure state. And so this will be true. And of course, if you take, if A is complement of B, so if this guy is, if B is complement of A, then now, if you take the whole region, because you are in pure state, this will be zero. Right? So these are the two basic properties satisfied by this von Neumann entropy. Questions? No? Everybody happy? OK. So that's the von Neumann entropy. But then there is yet another very useful concept of entropy, which is the thermodynamic entropy. Right? So the second one is the thermodynamic entropy. Entropy or coarse-grained. How do I spell that? Coarse-grained entropy. And so that's what you have seen in your statistical physics course. And then you know that there's this principle of maximal messiness or whatever, that you want to basically maximize this formula for the entropy, but you want to maximize it over all possible density matrices such that this is consistent with your observations. So you made a couple of observations. Let's say you measure the average energy of the system, or you measure the average, volume of the system and stuff like that. So macroscopic quantities, right? And then you are asking, and then you say, well, I'm trying to maximize this overall possible density matrices rho, which give me this thing here. Okay. So then, S thermodynamic is the maximum over all possible density matrices, rho log rho, such that this is consistent, consistent with the observation, and the observation is, let's say, I measure some average values of some operator, so it'll be trace rho ai. So for example, energy. So I impose that I have some energy, which is trace rho h, right? And so I always, I demand that my average energy is this thing here. And then I'm asking, do you maximize this thing here? Okay. And so in some sense, you always measure the finite number of these observables. So there's only a couple of observables, energy and typically only energy, right? And so there will be basically you have sloppiness. You measure only these things here, but then we are asking what are the possibilities which are consistent with this? But there's so many possibilities, right? And so basically you measure the degrees of freedom of the system which are available to you, provided that this is your constraint. Okay, so this is arises from sloppiness and measures the degrees of freedom, measures degrees of freedom available to system, provided you're, you know, consistent with the observations. With the observation so basically, you know, there may be many possibilities for the system to look like, but you know, at that given energy, right? And so that's precisely what this entropy measures, right? And so now, well, you can do a better argument, but there's a maximum here. So if there is a maximum, it's probably bigger than if there is no maximum. Okay, and so you can show that the S for Neumann entropy is always smaller or equal than the thermodynamic entropy. Okay, so this will always be true. And so now this is true. So we have these two types of entropies, but yes?
Just a question. I'm somehow looking at a different scale, in the sense that quantum mechanical entropy is an entropy that is defined when you look closer to your system, and the thermodynamic is when you look further
away. Sure. So here I'm interested in the macroscopic, you know, properties of the system and stuff like that. So this is what I measure, is the macroscopic properties, and I don't care really what the microscopics is, right? But there will be some freedom in this microscopics, which is consistent with my macroscopic observables and stuff like that. So this is precisely what you are doing, right? So in the thermodynamic limit or whatever, you send everything to n to infinity, not number of colors this time, but the number of particles and stuff like that. Anyway, the number of degrees of freedom. But you know, there will be so many microstates which are consistent with your macrostate, and basically this guy measures that. Like how many possibilities are there for the system to be consistent with your observation. But you are right, exactly. So that one is like, you know, that's the right entropy if you are interested in the true state of the system. Right here, you don't care about what the true state is. Yeah, here just, you know, I want to describe the phenomenology of the system, if you want. Okay, so now recall that if we have black holes, that in the presence of black holes, so now we are returning back to, I don't know, lecture one or lecture two. So we know that we could have we assigned to the black hole entropy, which was this Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, right? But and then we said, like in the first lecture, well, this Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, provided some energy conditions are satisfied, the area of the horizon is always getting bigger classically, right? So the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy is increasing, like no matter what you do. However, when you take quantum effects into account and you have the Hawking radiation, of course, you know, black hole radiates away things. You violate these energy conditions, and then the horizon and the black hole are getting smaller due to the Hawking radiation. So then it seems to be like the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy is decreasing, right? But we don't want the entropy to decrease, so we need to define a generalized entropy, which includes the entropy of, you know, what is outside of the black hole plus the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, and this one will never decrease. Okay, so we have this generalized entropy. Generalized entropy and as generalized, and that was precisely the S Bekenstein-Hawking, which was the area over 4, plus whatever happens outside. As outside. And this guy satisfied, you know, the law that this entropy never decreases, right? So delta obeys second law. So delta S generalized level decreases, right? So now, if I start thinking about this generalized entropy, the question is, what kind of entropy I'm talking about, right? Am I talking about the von Neumann entropy? Or am I talking about the thermodynamic entropy, right? And you can just think about like black hole formation, right? If you start forming a black hole, well, what happens? So at the beginning, the horizon area of the black hole is zero. There's no black hole. We just start with a star, whatever. Then we collapse this, we form a black hole. Suddenly this entropy is huge, right? So S outside may decrease a little bit because you collapse your star to the black hole, but really there's not much entropy in the star. So what happens is that this generalized entropy like jumps, and it suddenly from basically zero, it becomes huge, right? So, and that's the time evolution which we just done, right? So what it means is that definitely it cannot be the von Neumann entropy, which remains, you know, invariant under time evolution. It must be the thermodynamic entropy. So this guy must be the thermodynamic entropy. This guy must be the thermodynamic entropy as well, because, you know, they definitely change during the time evolution. So as I form the black hole, you know, this crazy jumps from zero to something huge. Questions? By the way, this seems obvious when you put it like this way, but nevertheless, it's not maybe that obvious because, for example, Carl very well, I've seen him arguing that this actually is the von Neumann entropy. Okay, so it's not maybe that clear as it might seem, and so be careful believing me in what I'm saying here, okay, or later on as well. So certainly, different people will tell you different things, but I think this is the majority of. Yeah, okay. So very good. So now we understand we have two types of entropies, and the generalized entropy and the black hole entropy is most likely the thermodynamic entropy because it changes in time. Okay. So now part B, Page curve. Don't Page is a genius in Alberta. And so when I came to Alberta, and I was told that I need to talk to every faculty there and ask them for PhD projects. And then Don said, well, okay, so I have two projects for you. One project is, well, I know that these people now, they are colliding the black holes numerically, right? I think it can be done analytically. Can you please do it? So that would be your PhD project. And then I said, if you don't like it, please solve the information paradox. Okay, so that was the second project. So this is the project which Don gives you. Typically, they are not finished, right, by the PhD students. Anyway, so page curve, what it is, right? So let's try to plot the entropy time diagram for what's happening with the black hole when, you know, when it starts evaporating and stuff like that. So let's say I put t equal to zero, the time when the black hole is formed. So this is the formation of the black hole. Okay. So at the time when the black hole is formed, then it has some black hole entropy, which is, you know, given by this area of the horizon. So this is the S plot as black hole. When it was formed, the black hole has certain size, and so that's the corresponding area. And so now, as the black hole evaporates, of course, the area is shrinking, and so is the black hole entropy. Okay. So basically go something like this. And at this time, there will be the time of evaporation. And so at the time when the black hole completely evaporated, then, of course, the horizon shrinks to zero, and there's no more black hole. There's no more black hole entropy. OK, so that's simple curve for what's happening with the black hole entropy. So now what's happening with the entropy of the Hawking radiation? Right. So at the beginning, when you form the black hole, there's not so much Hawking radiation. So there's no Hawking radiation. So you start over here. OK, so this will be as a radiation. Okay, and it starts with zero. But then you start, you know, the black hole evaporates more and more. You have more and more quanta outside of the black hole. And so the radiation of the black hole entropy increases. Okay. So now what Hawking told you is that, well, it's more and more quanta. So in the end, when the black hole has completely evaporated, there's just so much, you know, quanta of Hawking radiation. Everything is in the Hawking radiation now. And in that case, you know, the entropy of that radiation is huge because I have so many quanta. It's thermal radiation, and it has huge entropy. Okay, so this is the Hawking curve. Okay, so this goes like that. And of course, it's inconsistent with unitarity, because you started with the radiation, well, with pure state, and in the end, black hole is not there, but you have huge entropy stored in the Hawking radiation, and so you have mixed state, and then that's the paradox. Okay, so this is where the paradox is. Okay, so, and of course, you know, what I'm assuming here is that I can calculate this as radiation as quantum mechanical entropy, right? So really, in the end, I have no black hole whatsoever, but I can still calculate, you know, the quantum mechanical entropy of the system, and you know, that's stored in this radiation. And so really, that's why I have the paradox, because I started with pure state, or zero quantum mechanical entropy, and I end up with a mixed state, quantum mechanical, right, which has this non-trivial entropy. So that's the paradox here. Okay, so now let's look at what's happening with this Feynman entropy for the moment. So what's really happening is that you split your system into two parts. You have system, which is the black hole, and you have the system which is outside of the black hole. So that's your HA and HB. Okay, so we split space-time, basically, space-time into two regions. And let's say A corresponds to the black hole, and B corresponds to the outside of the black hole. Okay. And very good. So if this is nice and unitary evolution, as predicted by ADS-CFT, right, then the splitting, if I just put it back, both of the systems, A and B, I still have to have pure state. Okay. So if unitary evolution, as predicted by the ADS-CFT, then what must be true is that S of A must be S of B. The whole thing is in the pure state. So whatever the entropy of the black hole is, must be whatever the entropy of the radiation is, if I calculate the von Neumann entropy. That's the property here. So it means that as black hole, so this means as quantum mechanical entropy of the black hole must be the same as quantum mechanical entropy of the radiation. Okay. That's just that property about the von Neumann entropy. Happy? Yes?
How do you store entropy in radiation?
In radiation. I think the complicated question is how do you store the entropy in the black hole? But you know, when you talk about radiation, it's just your standard weakly coupled system where you know how to use quantum mechanics, quantum field theory to calculate entropy and stuff like that. At least in principle. So it's really you just you know. Do the standard partition function, let's say, and you calculate the entropy from the partition function.
Because how do you see that? Because when I'm doing entropy, I think that it is some sense of disorder, gives you some sense of the disorder. But when you have radiation, does that mean that the radiation can go in different directions?
So it certainly can go in different directions. Yeah. That's true, but. Okay, so it's the standard calculation. So you know you can have entropy in the radiation, right? Why not? You can have entropy in any system, right? It's really how you know It's an information about your quantum state, right? And so your radiation is a quantum system, and you can definitely assign quantum entropy. Does anybody have like a better explanation? Or Bruno, do you have any good explanation?
Well, I mean, just the entropy of a thermal state, right? The coarse grain features that you have are those of a thermal state, typically. So you have fluctuations of energy, you have excited states, it's not just the ground state. With different like excitation numbers. That's where the entropy is stored. Yeah, every mode of radiation will be in a thermal state. Thermal state will have a characteristic number of activity.
And also, it will be confusing about radiation because when we drive the looking page transition, the free energy of radiation is always zero.
True. it was also zero, sort of, in our picture of Hawking page phase transition. And the reason for that is because, you know, at that point we had, what you can show is that really what you have there is a thermal equilibrium between, you know, huge black hole or whatever and teeny tiny bit of radiation, right? And so, so yeah, we can return back to. But you had, like in that case, you had, I mean, in the final stage here, you have basically no black hole, but you have just radiation, right? And the entropy in the radiation can be big, right? Because, if it's like lots of radiation, it can be a big entropy. But it's a good question. Maybe we can discuss later. All right.
Sorry, I've got a question. I don't know if you can hear me. Oh, hi. okay, so two questions. One is like, okay, so we're saying unitarity holds because the entropy of the inside is equal to the entropy of the outside, but how does that then make the outside a pure state?
So the whole thing, so A plus B, so if you take both regions, it will be a pure state, right? So what, that's what we are assuming here, is that you know, because of the ADS CFT, we have to assume that the whole, you know, evolution of the whole system inside the bulk has to be unitary. And in that case, because we started in the pure state, like we have the pure state all the time. The only problem is that our pure state does not look like pure from outside of the black hole. But that's because we don't have access to the degrees of freedom inside the black hole. Does it make sense?
Yeah, okay. And that, I think that also answers my other question, because I was wondering about, like, you know, in general, like if you were doing quantum mechanics and you're just doing experiments on a quantum system, and you somehow have some sort of something that's like pure or as close to pure as you can get, you know, how would you transition between pure and pure and a mixed state? But maybe it's just like you include more of the system.
Yeah, exactly. So here, like if you include everything, it should be still pure, and you know, nothing is changing with that, right? But it's only, it doesn't look pure from the outside. So if you include the whole system, it has to be still pure. I'm talking to the clock, so there's sorry. I hope that answers your question. So now the key
yeah, answer. It does, thanks.
Okay, more questions? No. So now the key result for us is on that second blackboard, where we said, well, Feynman entropy has to be always smaller or equal than the thermodynamic entropy. Okay, so so we know that this von Neumann entropy of the black hole must be, so S black hole must be smaller or equal than the corresponding thermodynamic entropy of the black hole. But the corresponding thermodynamic entropy of the black hole is the Bekenstein-Hawking. Also, that's a stupid. Okay. Okay, so this thing here is the Feynman. And this thing here is the Bekenstein-Hawking. Okay. So this is the thermodynamic entropy of the black hole. I argue that this must be a thermodynamic because it evolves in time. right? But this one is the fine grain, the quantum entropy. And because of that formula, the fine grain entropy is always smaller or equal than the thermodynamic entropy. So this must be true. Okay. But at the same time, this guy here is equal to the S radiation for Neumann. Okay. So what you are learning here is that the quantum mechanical radiation entropy S radiation must be small or equal than S Bekenstein-Hawking. Okay. So this is what we just learned from the basic properties of the two entropies. Isn't this amazing? So now, if you look at the picture, what I am plotting here is, this is the Bekenstein-Hawking, this is the thermodynamic entropy of the black hole, right? This guy here is the quantum mechanical entropy. So that's the S tilde of radiation, right? So now what Hawking is telling you, well, here I'm happy as radiation is smaller than as black hole, right? But I'm happy only until this time here. Because if I keep evolving in time, at this point, as radiation is bigger than that of the black hole. Okay, and I violated that inequality. So Hawking cannot be right. And it's not that he's not right at the final stages of the evaporation, but rather he's not right at least from this time. Okay, so this is called page time. And it's roughly like half time of the black hole evaporation, if you want. But you know what happened is that, yes, it can be true that this is really what the S radiation is doing in this region until that time. But after that time, it cannot go up, as Hawking says. But rather, if the bound is saturated, then at most, it just follows this S black hole. Right? So what it has to do is that it has to turn around and go like that. So this is the page curve. Okay. And so if you want to preserve unitarity of evolution, the entropy in the radiation, well, it's happily increasing at the beginning of the evaporation, but at page time it has to start decreasing. And so at the end, when you evaporate your black hole completely, the quantum mechanical entropy of the radiation has to be zero because you have pure state. Okay, so page curve. So if you want to preserve unitarity, this is what must happen with the radiation entropy. Isn't this amazing? Okay, so this is something which Don drew in I don't know 1980s or something like that. And so really this is what has to happen with the radiation thing. But we also know that the quantum mechanical radiation entropy is the quantum mechanical black hole entropy. So of course, the black hole entropy has to, the fine-grained one has to follow the same curve because they are equal, right? So this is the thermodynamic black hole entropy, it's decreasing, but the quantum mechanical black hole entropy has to go also like this, also has to follow the page curve. Okay.
Sorry, I've got a question. How does radiation, how would that possibly have null entropy?
How it would have null entropy?
Or no entropy. How would you have, radiation that doesn't have any entropy?
Okay, so the thermodynamic entropy of the radiation will be huge, right? Because why not? It's the coarse grain entropy. The coarse grain entropy has to always increase. So, in the end, the Hawking radiation has to have at least as large entropy as the black hole when it was formed, right? Because this total generalized entropy is increasing in time, right? So we form the black hole. In that case, there's nothing outside, but there's a huge entropy in the black hole. And then, of course, this thermodynamic entropy keeps increasing even during the time evolution. So in the end, you have Hawking radiation where the thermodynamic entropy is huge, right? However, the microscopic, the quantum mechanical entropy, has to be zero because you recover a pure state. Magic. Okay. So now, part C is how do we
calculate
this, you know, S
radiation, or equally, you can calculate S of black hole, the quantum mechanical one, right?
So how do we calculate this, you know, von Neumann entropy of radiation or of black hole? Let me do, they are equal, so it doesn't matter which one you calculate. So let me calculate the black hole one, which is simpler. And for that, you have magic formula, which we have not derived, but Bruno sort of did in the last lecture. So what Bruno showed you is that, you know, there is this holographic entanglement entropy, right? So that relates, you know, I can calculate the entanglement entropy of, you know, of a region on your boundary of your cylinder, and there was a magic formula for how to do that. And so the magic formula is basically, let me use the last formula, which is like the quantum extremal surface one, and that was given by, you're trying to find minimum over all possible extremal surfaces, X. So this is the quantum extremal surface. In the static case, it's just a minimal surface, right? So you take t equal to constant slice, and you're finding a minimal. So you have your boundary, right? In the case of entanglement entropy, I'm interested what is the entanglement between some part of the boundary and the rest, and you just draw a surface which is anchored on this thing here, and you calculate the area of that surface, and it's a minimal surface, and you minimize that. Okay, and so if you have time dependent things, then you are, instead of finding a minimal surface, you are finding extremal surface. And the reason is because of the signature of time, you are trying to minimize things in the space, and you are trying to maximize them in time. Okay, and that's why it's an extremal surface rather than a minimal surface. Right? It's like a strange thing. Okay. So anyway, so now it's minimum over all possible these extremal surfaces, and then we have the extremal surface X. Okay. And that was the formula. It was the area of this extremal surface divided by 4g plus s outside or semi-classical of I'll draw a picture in a minute. It's a Cauchy surface, sort of some kind of Cauchy surface, which ends on this extremal surface. So for our case, I'll show you what it is. But basically, you know, if you look at this thing here, it reminds you this generalized entropy, right? So if I look at this generalized entropy of Bekenstein and whatever, so you see that I have something like a black hole entropy here, which is the area over 4, plus something which is outside of that, right? So this is precisely that. You have area over 4 plus something which is outside of that. Okay. So now how does it work for the black hole? Is that I will draw this evaporating black hole picture which people like. So this is your things like that. So that's your and then, you know, of course, you form this outside of the collapse. So this is your collapsing matter. Then you form the horizon, something like this here. So this is the horizon. Okay. And then people like to draw cutoff surface. I don't really know what a cutoff surface is. But anyway, let me draw a cutoff surface here. Okay, and so then what the extremal surface is, right? So typically when you would use this generalized entropy formula here, is that you would say, well, I want to calculate what is my generalized entropy at a given instant of time. So what you do is that you choose an instant of time, right? So this is my Cauchy surface at a given instant of time. However, now I just ended at the cutoff surface. Why not? So this is my cutoff. So cutoff surface. And this is my Cauchy slice at that given instant of time, okay? And then if you were to use that formula over there, what you would do is that if you want to calculate what is the entropy in this slice, you would say, well, very good, so I have the horizon located here. So I calculate how big the horizon is, right? That gives me the black hole entropy. Plus, I have this piece here. And through that piece, I can have some Hawking variation going through this slice. So there will be some quantum entropy outside of this black hole, and that will be the second contribution. So this will be the S black hole, and this will be the S outside, right? So I calculate this S outside on this piece, and I have the S black hole there. So now this will be that formula, which is 40 years old. So now we upgraded it. You say, well, we replace the horizon of the black hole with an extremal surface. Okay, if you want to calculate the full quantum mechanical entropy. Okay, so now what happens is that the extremal surface is slightly below the black hole horizon. So this is your extremal surface, right? So it's now you can imagine like a sphere, but it's just slightly of the small radius than the black hole radius. So this is your x, and then this piece here is your region sigma x, which is like basically the region which goes from this extremal surface to your cutoff at that given Cauchy slice. Okay, and so then what you have to calculate is the area of this extremal surface x plus how much Hawking radiation is going through the sigma x, right? And that gives me this contribution here. And if I sum the two and find a minimum, then that's what my full gravitational entropy is. Okay, so this gives the full von Neumann gravitational entropy of gravitating systems. Okay, so this formula supposedly gives you the von Neumann entropy of any gravitating system, right? If I just have to minimize over these two piece contribution, one comes from the area of some extremal surface, one comes from how much entropy I have outside of that extremal surface. I calculate these two together, and I take the minimum, and that's what gives me the von Neumann entropy. Yes?
Just a clarification question. Is sigma x is codimension 1? X is codimension 2.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Precise. So sigma x is a part of your Cauchy surface. It's like T-Kudlow constant slice, codimension 1. And this guy here will have one less dimension. It's like a boundary of that. Yes?
Since we said that the extremal surface would be slightly behind the horizon, doesn't that mean that some parts of the sigma x would also be like hidden behind the horizon?
Wait. Yeah. Very good question. So, that's part C. So the statement is this formula here, which generalizes whatever Bruno showed you last time, right? Somehow calculates this von Neumann entropy of gravitating systems. Okay, it's the development of last 5 years or something like that. Maybe now more, maybe 8 years. Anyway, so part D. Let's use this formula to actually recover the Page curve. Okay, so Page curve recovery. Page curve recovery fairy tale. Okay. And so basically, people sort of believe that the page curve is right, but they thought, well, we can never recover this page curve. It's a huge departure from Hawking, right? So Hawking goes up, page goes down, right? So how you have this huge discrepancy, but the discrepancy starts happening at the T page, which is like when the black hole is still very, very large and classical and stuff like that. So people always thought, well, maybe I need some quantum gravity effects at the final stages of evaporation when everything is Planck size and stuff like that to actually recover the information. But this shows no. At the final stages of evaporation, there's simply not enough entropy stored in the black hole so that I can purify my Hawking radiation, right? So it cannot be the final stage effect. It must happen already, the departure must happen already here when everything is still very classical and nice, right? And so So then, you know, it was a, so you know, people were thinking, well, I need full quantum gravity to understand the page curve. But you know, this Siltman argument shows maybe you don't need full quantum gravity to recover, because everything is still very, very classical at the page time. Okay, so we do not need quantum gravity to recover this. This as at TH, everything is still very big. Black hole is still big, is still very big and classical. And this is where actually already the discrepancy actually appears, right? So anyway, so how the fairy tale goes, okay? So in the first stage, you form the black hole. So let me draw three pictures. So one black hole just formed. Okay, if the black hole just formed, there's no Hawking radiation yet emitted, okay? So no Hawking radiation. If that is the case, then okay, very good. So then this is my picture like that. Okay, so this is my horizon. So then the question is, which extreme of surface? So there's no Hawking radiation whatsoever, right? So I draw this Cauchy slice over here, right? But then I have to minimize the sum of the two contributions here. There's no Hawking radiation, so S semi-classical will be zero. Okay, so S semi-classical is zero because there is nothing outside, right? So there's no Hawking radiation flowing anywhere. So then how do I minimize this thing here? It means I have to minimize the area of X. How do I minimize the area of X? What is the minimum area I can put a sphere around the black hole? And I want that this sphere has the minimal area whatsoever. Where do I put my extremal surface? If I make it that big, well, the area is big. If I make it that small, it's smaller. It's zero. Okay, very good. So in this case, your extremal surface will be sitting at r equal to zero, and the area is zero. Okay, so in this case, the extremal surface is at r equal to zero, and its corresponding area is zero. So in this case, the total entropy is zero. So S is zero in this picture. Okay. Very good. So that precisely corresponds to this point here. I just formed the black hole. This is my total radiation entropy. All the black hole entropy doesn't matter, the quantum mechanical one. At the time of the formation, it's zero. Okay. So then, picture two is that I have a little bit of Hawking radiation. So slightly later, you know, you start evaporating your black hole. And so the picture now looks like something like this, right? But again, this is my horizon. That's my Cauchy slice here. So now there's a little bit of radiation going through this slice over here, right? So in that case, I may have non-trivial extremal surface, because now I have to minimize the sum. So there will now be non-trivial semi-classical contribution. So S semi-classical is no longer zero. But maybe I can compensate for some, you know, I can eat a little bit of radiation by moving the surface X a little bit outside of r equal to zero, because if I move it a little bit here, okay, the Hawking radiation which was going through this will not contribute, right? So in that case, you know, the extremal surface slightly moves outside from r equal to zero, but now S semi-classical is zero, S how do I call it? Area of X is non-zero. Area of X is a little bit non-zero, but you know, roughly zero. And then the total thing is, you know, a little bit non-zero, but it's sort of increasing as more and more radiation so slowly increases as more and more radiation is produced, right? It precisely corresponds to rising the entropy here, right? I'm slowly, you know, I'm slowly evaporating my black hole, and I'm rising the entropy here. Okay. So now that's great. However, what is happening as more and more radiation is produced, you want to exclude this semi-classical more and more. And you are moving your x radius further and further away from r equal to 0. So at t equal to Hawking page, at t equal to page, so part 3 around t page time, we have the picture where precisely the total entropy is something like the black hole entropy, which is remaining in the black hole, in the right here, right? But in that case, if I have my cutoff, again, I include only the part of this thing. So let's say the cutoff is very close to the horizon. So anyway, so my extremal surface moved from r equal to 0 to somewhere here, where the area of x is something like, divided by 4, is something like the black Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, right? In that case, you know, so this is my thing, and it's only a little bit of radiation going in the remaining region here, but the main dominant contribution for my total entropy is from this area of x, right? And what you can show is that really this x sort of lies very, very close to the black hole horizon, okay? So now x is close to black hole horizon, and the S is something like S Bekenstein-Hawking, the total thing here. Okay, so that happens at the page time. But what happens after that? After that, this still remains true that X is sort of close to the black hole horizon. However, the black hole horizon is slowly shrinking. So this entropy will be also shrinking. Okay, so later as black hole is shrinking, so will be the S black hole, but also DS and S. And if they are, you know, if it's saturated, it's precisely this downward part of the curve. Okay? And so, in the end, as the black hole evaporated completely, of course, at this point of the evaporation, really the radius of the black hole is not clear from this picture, right? But the radius of the black hole is 0. Right? So at this point when the black hole evaporates here, there's no more black hole. And the entropy is 0 to get S equal to 0 at evaporation. Okay. And so you recover the page curve for the black hole entropy. Okay. The question is, what happens with the radiation entropy? Exactly the same thing happens because we have that the radiation entropy is equal to S black hole. But there is something I just want you to hear, this name. There is an Iceland formula. Island formula. Do you know what island is in the middle of the sea where Robinson Crusoe was? So island. So basically, if you want to calculate the entropy of the radiation, so this thing here, when I plot a picture like this, I have my cutoff here, and then this is my extremal surface, and I have to calculate the area of the extremal surface plus whatever the normal contribution to the entropy through the surface is, that gives me the entropy of the black hole, right? Now, if you want to calculate the entropy of the radiation in order this to be equal to that, it must be a complement. So if I take the whole region, the entropy is zero, right? So the entropy stored in this thing here must be the same as the entropy stored in the complement of the spacetime. But what is the complement of the spacetime? It's this piece here and that piece there. Okay, what it means is that if I talk about what happens outside of the black hole, so this thing here describes what is inside. So x plus this piece describes my black hole. So these things here are the black hole. However, here I'm deeply inside the black hole. Nevertheless, if I want to have S radiation equal to S black hole, I need to include this piece here. This is called island. Okay, this is island. And the island has to contribute to the entropy of the radiation. So if I want to calculate the entropy of the radiation, I have again extremal surface, which contributes to that, plus I have this piece and that piece that gives me S radiation. So S radiation will be again the area of x divided by 4 g plus sum of the two things. So it will be S semi-classical on the island plus whatever is outside here, plus out here. Okay, and if you calculate it from here, it gives you precisely that it equals to S black hole. So this is very crazy, right? It's saying like whatever is deep, deep, deep inside the black hole suddenly contributes to the radiation rather than the black hole entropy. This sounds very, very crazy. What it means is that actually this piece of the black hole, which looks deeply in the black hole, has to be already accessible from outside. Isn't that amazing? So basically, what nobody explains how this is accessible. Okay, there are some models, toy models, which they claim, well, maybe I can access it somehow. Nobody tells you really how. But nevertheless, you know, basically this piece of the black hole is already out of the black hole, quantum mechanically. That's crazy. So let me stop here. I prepared for you, but I don't have time to show you, a short summary of the course, which is some pictures, like what we have done in the course and what you can do. So I will upload it on the on the website, and you can go through. It's like 10 pages of PowerPoint presentation with nice pictures. So that is like a brief summary of the course. Let's not do it now. So let me stop here. Are there any questions?
What is the meaning of the comment?
What is the? Minimum of dashed line. Dashed line. What is the dashed line? This thing here? Oh, the cutoff here. I never understood what this cutoff is. So I think what the cutoff typically is that like here, you know, your gravitational field is important. It can be strong gravity and stuff like that. I think what's happening inside the cutoff is that you have to take gravity into account, whereas sort of outside of the cutoff, you can just treat it as QFT in flat space, and you don't need to care about the gravitational degrees of freedom and stuff like that. So people like that is. I think that's what it means. But yeah. More questions.
Can you give a flavor for the dual theory picture? Because this
entropy here is just it's promoted to be the von Neumann gravitational entropy of any gravitating system, right? Of course, you sort of derived it on the CFT side. Right, that's what Bruno did last time when he was deriving this entanglement entropy and stuff like that. But here, what this formula really is supposed to mean is like you take any gravitating system whatsoever, right? And if I want to calculate its quantum mechanical entropy, it's given by this formula. There will be some extremal surface, right? And the extremal surface is given. Well, how do I find where the extremal surface is? Is that I extremize, you know, this generalized entropy over here, which is the contribution of the area of the extremal surface plus whatever the quantum entropy is outside of that surface, right? So I extremize this. That's what gives me the extremized surface. And I can have several extremal surfaces, maybe. I take minimum out of these, and that's what the entropy is. Okay?
The entire boundary?
Okay, very good. So, so yes, if you include the full system, it's like the entropy of the end. Yeah.
And how do we know that the entropy of the equals the entropy of?
So you know, for black holes in ADS, and you asked me about it, at some point, you really have like two-sided black holes. You have two boundaries, right? And so you have black hole in the middle, and so if you include the whole boundary here, what you are still tracing out is the other boundary, right? And so that's what gives you the total entropy of the system, but it also gives you the entropy of like when one boundary is traced out. So it's something like that.
Still confused by the difference between the von Neumann entropy and this thermodynamic entropy, because it feels like the whole paradox argument relies between a confusion between the two.
Theoretically
compared.
Exactly. So let me just write this glorious conclusion here. So PageCare was recovered by semi-classical calculations very recently, and that's like a huge, huge result. So now you are exactly right to be worried about what is the relation between von Neumann entropy, what is the relation between thermodynamic entropy. And yes, I think that's the main part of the confusion, and that's where people don't agree on. Right? So some people will tell you the black hole entropy, the Bekenstein-Hawking formula, is a fine-grained entropy. Right, I've seen that many times. So I think it's probably not. I think it's the thermodynamic entropy. I believe Maldacena. but it's something. But of course, another thing why people don't think, if people never heard about ADS-CFT, right? What is the reason to believe that your evolution should be unitary? Right, in some sense, you have the singularity. Things can disappear in the singularity. The information can be destroyed in the singularity. If I have the picture of Hawking radiation as creating Hawking pair, one guy escaping to infinity, one guy ending underneath the horizon going to singularity, how do I know that I can recover this guy who went to the singularity? How do I restore this entanglement, right? But of course, what it also assumes sort of is that really you don't have a singularity truly. Right, what you will have probably is some region of higher curvature region, where things are trapped for some time, but later on they can sort of escape, right? So then, so in that case you can happily evaporate everything and there's nothing left. But if there is something left, right? If there is really another universe where the information went to through the singularity and stuff like that, then it may. You may violate unitarity.
For example, you had the definition for the thermodynamic entropy related, that it relates to the von Neumann entropy. Where did that definition come from? Because
Say it again. Oh, which one?
The second blackboard.
This one here?
Part, yes.
Yeah. So this is just the standard definition of the thermodynamic entropy, right? You're just extremizing the von Neumann entropy over all possible density matrices which are consistent with your macroscopic observation.
What do you mean by consistent with microscopic?
So let's say you measure the system and the system has this energy, right? So then microscopically it can be described by a million different microstates, different million density matrices rho, right? But so that the energy is still conserved, it's still the same energy, right? But if you want to calculate the entropy, it's basically you count how many possibilities are there to form this macrostate out of the microstates. And it's measured by this thermodynamic entropy. And this is the standard thermodynamic definition as you've seen it probably in the statistical physics course. Maybe you have seen it in the statistical physics course. Have you seen it in the statistical physics course? No. Okay, you have seen it somewhere, right? So this is the standard thermodynamic entropy definition.
This is the only thing we can define, or this is the only definition we can have?
I don't know if this is the only definition you can have, but certainly a definition. Sorry?
There is a mean mix entropy, for example, tells us the minimum matrix of freedom you need to capture.
I see. Okay. Yeah. But basically, this is how you derive, let's say, the Gibbs distribution, right? You say, well, I you know, this is my definition. I want this. I want to maximize this entropy, and that's what gives you the Gibbs distribution, for example. That's what gives you the, yeah, partition function. It gives you that it's a trace of minus beta h and stuff like that. If I keep the energy as an expectation value of rho h, right? If you impose more things, your partition function will be, let's say, beta h plus, I don't know, PV thing. So if you keep the volume or the pressure, something like that, then there will be more contributions to your partition function and stuff like that. But in the simplest case, in the canonical ensemble, you have that the expectation value is this fixed energy, right? And then you just have trace of minus beta h. Okay, this is the end of the course. So thank you so much. It was so fun to teach you like at the beginning of the PSI and now at the end of the PSI. It was great fun. So thank you so much. And I wish you all the best in your future endeavors. And I hope you will be happy in your life. Thank you.
Thank you.